Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am John Milford, chair of the club's grown-ups forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Esther Koch. Esther is a gerontologist and healthcare advisor. Her firm, Encore Management, provides personal and corporate advisory services on Medicare, primarily assisting individuals with their initial Medicare elections and their annual Medicare prescription drug plan elections. Esther is a Medicare Aging Network partner with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid and the Administration on Aging, and was a delegate to the White House Conference on Aging. In addition, she has a broad business background as a CFO and entrepreneur. Her professional credentials include Stanford MBA and PricewaterhouseCoopers CPA. Esther speaks on a wide range of aging, retirement, and elder care topics and is a frequent speaker at the Commonwealth Club. Her media interviews and articles have appeared on television, radio, online, and in print. So at this time, let's welcome our speaker, Esther Koch.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and I welcome all of you. This will be a time to learn about Medicare, what you need to know before you're 65, a Medicare primer. It is primarily targeted to people that are soon to be eligible Medicare beneficiaries. However, if you are already over age 65, I'm sure that there's some things that you are going to learn. Or if you are under age 65, caring for an aging parent, you will also there will also be points here for you to learn tonight. My goals are to bring clarity to Medicare. I can't make it simple, but it's to bring clarity to some of the aspects of it. So I'm really going to be touching on the basics of Medicare. We're going to learn the Medicare alphabet, the ABCs and Ds of Medicare. Then we're going to talk about Medigap insurance. I'm also getting into employee and retiree coverage as we're finding that people are staying in the workforce longer. There's some implications with employer plans. And then a little more detail on Medicare prescription drug plans. What I'm not covering is Medicaid, or what's in California known as Medi-Cal, which is where Medicare is a health insurance program. Medicaid is actual medical services to those with low income and resource. So I will not be getting into low income and resource programs, nor will I be getting into Medicare coverage, which you might have if you're disabled and under 65. So I'm really talking to when you become 65 and you will be eligible for Medicare. So let's start first what we're talking about. Medicare covers medically necessary health care expenses. Not all expenses, but medically necessary health care expenses in the United States. So if you are planning to travel in your retirement, you are going to need to get an additional health care coverage while you are abroad. Medicare will not cover you while abroad. You're eligible at age 65. Sometimes that gets confused. People think of age 62, which is Social Security. It is age 65 for Medicare. You are required to enroll, and the government only in certain instances tells you about that, when to enroll. Otherwise, it's your responsibility to enroll, just as it's your responsibility to fill out an income tax return. There are penalties for late enrollment, but there are special enrollment periods if you're otherwise covered primarily under employer-type plans. So that's the basic coverage in general. So now let's start in the, I like to call it the Medicare alphabet, the ABCs and Ds. So Medicare Part A is hospitalization. Medicare Part B is the medical side. So you tend to think of that as everything else. Medicare Part C is a managed care plan. It's offered through a health insurance intermediary, so you would be contracting through a health insurance company, but it's part of the Medicare plan. It gets reimbursed by the government. And Medicare Part D is prescription, D for drugs, prescription drugs. That, too, is the government has outsourced that to health insurance intermediaries, so you would interface with a health insurance company, but that is indeed part of the Medicare program. So I found it's helpful if you think of this on a timeline as to when these plans got implemented. So back in 1965, when Medicare started, all we had was Medicare A and B. That was what we had originally. And it turns out that that's now what that's kind of called, is original Medicare. Then what came into existence were Medigap plans. These are not part of Medicare. They're private insurance. They are plans that fill the gaps where Medicare doesn't cover everything. There might be copays and deductibles or coinsurance. These are private insurance plans to fill those gaps. And then what came, so remember, there's a 30-year time frame that Medicare was in this stage. The other thing that came about were retiree plans. Again, these are not part of the Medicare program. These are company plans given to retirees. So that was really the first, for 30 years, this is about all we had in the Medicare arena and associated with Medicare. Then in the late 1990s, Medicare Advantage plans came into existence. They've come under a wide variety of names. The more common names now are Medicare Advantage plans, but you might see a new Medicare Health plan. But some people might be in other plans. And then the Part D program, the drug program, came into existence in 2006. So there's also another way that I like to look at this alphabet. If you look at it as an equation where A plus B plus C plus D equals all of Medicare, so now from that left side of the equation, if I pull that Part C and put it over to the right side of the equation, I now have a gap between B and D. So I like to think of this as Part A plus Part B plus a Medigap policy plus a drug plan basically equals a managed care plan. And this is really the first decision that you need to make in terms of your Medicare coverage. Option number one is a fee-for-service option where you can go to any Medicare provider. That would be where you take Medicare A and B, you probably get a Medigap policy and a prescription drug plan. Or you choose to go the Medicare Advantage route, which is an all-inclusive coverage that generally includes drug coverage. The reason why it's important to think about that as to how you want to get your health services is that although it's easy to move from the fee-for-service option area to a Medicare Advantage plan, it's not always easy to get back to a fee-for-service model from a Medicare Advantage plan. And I'm going to go into that in a little more detail. But that's really your first option. Do you want to have your Medicare coverage in a fee-for-service model going to any Medicare provider, or do you want to have a managed care model? So now let's just go into a little more of what these parts are. Part A, hospitalization, generally related to a hospital visit. So inpatient hospital care, skilled nursing care after a hospital stay usually. Home health is usually after a hospital stay. And then hospice care, when Medicare was originally implemented, hospice care was really more given in a hospital. Now it can be given in the home, and there may not be a hospital stay. But generally, the Part A covers hospitalization. The Part B is everything else, so that includes the outpatient hospital services. But doctor services are under Part B, even though in the hospital you might have gone to a doctor. That's really not part of the hospital. When you think about it before, doctors had privileges in hospitals. Now you may find hospitalists who are employees of the hospital, but that wasn't how it was before. So think of Part B as everything else. So the primary gaps in this coverage is very similar to when you, if you have a company plan or an individual plan. For Part A, the biggest gap is the deductible of $1,156 in 2012, but it is not an annual deductible. It's based on a 60-day period that you have not been in the hospital. So, for instance, if you are in the hospital the first day of each month in each quarter, there would actually be four deductibles, hospital deductibles, that you would be owing on your Part A coverage. The Part B medical, the deductible is only $140 a year, but there the biggest gap is Medicare generally pays 80%. You are responsible for 20%. So that's the coinsurance. Again, somewhat similar to company plans that you might have or an individual plan. So what Medicare law does not cover? It is not required to cover. It does not cover routine dental, eyeglasses, or hearing aids. But probably the biggest thing that people get confused about is that it doesn't cover long-term care expenses. I mentioned that it covered medically necessary expenses. Long-term care expenses tend to be when your level of ability is now at a lower level. So, for instance, bathing, dressing, managing your medications, going to the store, using a telephone. Those are not the responsibility of the government. Those are your personal care responsibilities. If you broke a hip and later to the point where you can no longer walk, yes, when you broke the hip, that was medically necessary treatment, but now you have a new steady state that is ultimately your responsibility to care for yourself. Those are considered personal care expenses. So that's sometimes confusing to people. The reason they call it long-term is that versus acute care, you will get better. Under long-term care, once you have hit that point, you will not generally get better. Once you cannot walk, you're not going to get out of that state. Once you cannot bathe, you will not generally get out of that state. So that's a really important distinction. Long-term care expenses are not covered by Medicare. So what does all this cost? Part A is usually, in terms of premiums, Part A is usually premium-free for people who have worked. And that's a requirement of generally 10 years of service paying into the Medicare system. But Part B does, that's the medical, does have a premium to it. And that currently is about $100 a month. But there are adjustments if you are in a higher income level. Don't worry about it. The government will find you and send you an extra premium. It's based on a modified adjusted gross income, but they will figure that out for you. With amounts going to the highest amounts, if you are above $214,000 for an individual return and over $428,000 for a joint return. So applying for Medicare. Coverage really begins when you sign up. And this presentation is called What You Need to Know Before You're 65. What you don't want to do is wait till you're 65 to sign up. Your actual initial election period is 7 months, 3 months before your birthday, the month of your 65th birthday, and 3 months after. But if you don't sign up 3 months before, it's not going to start on your birthday month. And probably your coverage that you currently have states that once you turn 65, it's no longer going to cover you. So you don't want to have any gaps in your insurance coverage, so you want to make sure that you sign up. I recommend people start doing this 3 months ahead of their birthday month. And it usually takes Medicare, Social Security, at least 4 weeks to send you your Medicare card anyway. So you want to do this before because you don't want any gaps in any type of coverage. you apply through Social Security. Social Security has the retail offices. You are automatically enrolled in Medicare A and B if you are already on Social Security. You do have, however, the opportunity to decline B if you're also working at, you can still decline B even though they automatically sign you up. That will be included in your paperwork. You can enroll in person, online or on the phone. If you are signing up for both A and B, you can definitely enroll online. However, if you are declining Part B, which some people do because they have other coverage, usually from an employer, which I'll get into more detail on, you cannot enroll online if you're declining Part B. So you have to apply either by phone or in person. And I've been finding with my clients lately, they've been telling me different stories about what Social Security is requiring from them. So now I'm recommending to people to make a phone call to Social Security to find what is in your record. Some people I'm finding are being required to bring in a birth certificate. A birth certificate or a passport should be sufficient, but I had a client just the other day that went in with a passport. It wasn't accepted. So it's it was always a Social Security card, and now I'm being told you don't need the Social Security card. So I would say a Social Security card, a birth certificate, a passport, and a photo ID, just so that if you are going into an office, you have everything there. And that's why I'm saying it might be beneficial to make a phone call to Social Security first to determine what your record has in it. And there is a 10% penalty per full year if you enroll late in Parts A. Excuse me, the 10% penalty applies to Part B because there's a premium associated with it. As again, most people don't have to pay a premium for Part A, but there is a penalty for late enrollment. So that's Medicare. That's original Medicare. Now we're going to go into Medigap insurance. I'm going to do this more chronologically, how the programs came into existence. Medigap insurance, as I said, is private insurance. It is not part of the Medicare program. It's officially known as Medicare supplemental insurance, but most people call it Medigap because it's covering the gaps. But if you looked at any type of policy, it's going to say Medicare supplemental insurance. So as I said, it covers these gaps of not so much coverage, but payment of those expenses that are covered. You have to have Medicare Parts A and B to buy a Medigap policy, and it only works with the original Medicare. So you will actually, if you sign up for a Medicare Advantage plan, you would not have a Medigap plan, and it's actually against the law for somebody to sell it to you. But the thing that I don't feel people really understand about a Medigap policy is that it can potentially cover most of your medical expenses. Now, there's the caveat you have to go to the right providers and you have to choose the plan with the most coverage. But there is no coverage insurance product that right now you're in a company plan and you have your deductible for the year and you have your coinsurance. You can't buy an insurance policy to cover that. But that's in essence what a Medigap policy does. So if you get the richest plan and you go to the right providers, you have, in essence, you will have no out-of-pocket other than your premiums. And I think that's something that people don't understand about the structure of Medigap, because there's nothing else like that as an insurance model. Now, although these are not part of Medicare, these plans are approved by the government, and they're standardized. There now happen to be 11 of these plans. Once again, we have an alphabet soup here. They are labeled plans A through N. A few letters have been retired in there. But they are standard government-approved policies. So an A policy from Company X is the same as an A policy from Company Y in the state of California, in the state of Texas. There's only a few states that are not standardized, but it is a standardized policy. However, the premiums are going to vary based on how the company determined that they were going to charge premiums. So not only is it, and it's the premium itself, but also the way they calculate the premium. And the two primary ways that premium is calculated is by age attained. So as you reach a higher age, you will be charged a higher premium. Or what's called community rated, where it doesn't mean that the premium isn't going to go up, but it's based on a community basis. In general, we find that community rated plans are smoothed out more on premium increases. And a better example of that would be if you were in San Jose, which you know has a younger cohort getting to above age 65, it's probably going to have a smoother base for its premiums. However, if you live in Philadelphia, which is known as a naturally occurring retirement community, a NORC, you know, that probably wouldn't be the place that you would want a community rated plan. So again, doesn't mean that the premium is not going to go up, but it's based on a different methodology of premium increases. Generally, there's a table that shows you the differences between these coverages on these standardized plans. And when you purchase them is during the plan's open enrollment, which is in essence when you have Part A and Part B, which could be if you're signing up for both Parts A and B of Social Security when you turn 65, it could be when you're 65. Or if you're under a company plan and you later sign up for Part B, you will get that open enrollment when you have both A and B. And the plan coverage will start on the day the Plan B coverage is effective. Again, it lasts for a longer period, but you don't want any lapse in coverages, so all of this should be done before your trigger date on all of these. The important part is during this time, an insurance company has to give you guaranteed acceptance. They cannot decline you. They cannot deny you coverage. They cannot make you wait for coverage to start. They can't wait for coverage of a pre-existing condition. And they can't charge you more for a policy because you have certain health problems. So it's called guaranteed acceptance. And that's very important with respect to, because this is a private insurance plan. Most private insurance plans require underwriting. These are special guaranteed acceptance periods for Medigap policies. So that's kind of the basics of a Medigap policy. And I would say that, again, in that timeline that I gave you where in the beginning there was only original Medicare and a Medigap policy, if you were talking to me between 1965 and 1995, and here's something else people say wrong, they tend to say, what kind of coverage you have? They tend to say, XYZ company. Well, actually, if you talked to me between 1965 and 1995, I would have known that was a Medigap policy. And really, that's only covering the gaps. What your basic insurance is really Medicare. The bulk of it is Medicare. But people use that terminology, and they don't really understand. So that's how that Medigap policy interacts. So now I want to talk about Medicare Part C, which are these managed care options. So again, this is where the government outsourced. So you're going to sign up through a health insurance company. But it is part of Medicare. Medicare is reimbursing those health insurance companies. The primary models that we have now, since the late 1990s, we've had a multitude of different models. Primary model now is an HMO. So, for example, in San Francisco, as of March this year, there are six HMO plans, Medicare Advantage plans with drug coverage. There's one without drug coverage. And there's one PPO plan with drug coverage. There used to be a lot more managed care models and offerings within an area, but that has reduced over time. There's been consolidation in the market. You really need to make sure that you read the fine print, just as if you're comparing an HMO policy with the current employer to having the opportunity to go to any provider. You really need to look through the fine print before you sign up. So with a Medicare managed care, you have to have parts A and B. And I like to think of it as you're exchanging them. You're still in the Medicare system. It's like you've decided to exchange part A and part B for part C. So the part B premium is still going to apply. The Medicare Advantage plan may have a premium for the health portion of the plan, and it may also have a premium for the drug portion. So there may be two additional premiums that come into play, or there may be no premium. In some markets, there's been a lot of competition, so the premiums were zero. I don't think you're going to be seeing that as much as you saw that in the past, though. Again, you enroll through this health insurance intermediary. Again, it generally includes drug coverage. As I mentioned, the offerings, there was only one that didn't include drug coverage. And generally, the reason there's one without drug coverage is that for those people who have VA coverage, they have a very, very good drug plan. So sometimes somebody will have their VA drug plan and then they want a Medicare Advantage plan. So most people are getting a Medicare Advantage plan with drugs. So although with a Medicare Advantage plan, you're really purchasing it for the healthcare benefits. It comes with drugs, but you're really purchasing it for the healthcare benefits. And when you think about, again, let's say the company plan or the individual plan, you really get it for the health benefits. You just accept what drug plan goes along with it. So that is how you're really choosing a Medicare Advantage plan for the health benefits in it. So it generally covers some of the gaps in parts A and part B, frequently has copays that are part of the plan. And it may provide additional preventive services and sometimes dental and vision. So with a Medicare Advantage, it's potentially the most all-encompassing plan. However, it has the most restrictions as to usage. So you're restricted to a particular provider network. You're usually required to see a primary care physician first. You're usually required to have a referral from that primary care physician to get to a specialist. You have to live in the plan area. That's why you don't see as many Medicare Advantage plans in rural areas. They can't do the coverage in that area. And you will only get emergency coverage if you're outside of the plan area. So if you happen to have two homes, you would not want to be in a Medicare Advantage plan because you're already in two areas. You would not have anything other than emergency care accessed in the location that is not your primary residence. So here's the point that once in a Medicare Advantage plan, it's difficult to get back to this fee-for-service because generally there's no guaranteed acceptance back into a Medigap plan after the first year of coverage. So let me go through some. There are some special provisions where you get guaranteed acceptance if you go from a Medicare Advantage plan back into a Medigap plan. You move out of the plan's area. Tough to plan for that, you'd move out of the plan's area. The Medicare Advantage coverage could be ended by the provider. The insurance company committed fraud. Now here's trial number one. If you join a Medicare Advantage program plan when you're first eligible and try it, you don't like it, as long as you're within a year, you can go back, you can get a Medigap policy and get guaranteed acceptance. So they give you a trial period of a year. Another example is if you started with a Medigap plan, then later you decided you wanted to try a Medicare Advantage plan. Again, if you're in that plan less than a year, they will let you go back to a Medigap plan with guaranteed acceptance. However, if you are in a Medicare Advantage plan for over a year, unless one of these unique things happens, you don't get guaranteed acceptance back into this private insurance Medigap plan. And the likelihood at age 65 and older, you will go through underwriting and you're not going to be accepted. So that's why I feel that this decision of whether you're going to go a managed care approach versus a fee-for-service approach is really the first point that you need to address as you look at your Medicare options. There are enrollment periods for Medicare Advantage. Again, what you need to do before you're 65, you will take care of this before your other coverage concludes, and so that you will have no lapse in coverage. Then there are annual election periods, October 15th to December 7th, that you can switch between Medicare Advantage plans. Then there's a disenrollment. It gets a little more confusing on what your options are here. There's an actual separate disenrollment time. But again, you may not get back. It's likely you won't get back into a Medigap plan if you want to get out of the Medicare Advantage program entirely. And then there's five-star plan enrollments, which are anytime. Five stars is the highest rated plan under Medicare Advantage, and if the plan is a five-star plan, you can move into that plan at any time during the year. That's a reward for receiving five-star status. So I want to talk a little about Medicare Advantage plans the near term. The monetary cuts to Medicare through the Affordable Care Act were primarily to Medicare Advantage plans. And the reason was, part of the reason Medicare Advantage plans were started was the government felt outsourcing this, they would be reducing their liability for Medicare costs. That was the premise, that these plans would be cheaper to the government. It turned out that the reimbursement rate was running 9 to 13% higher than what was being paid in the Medicare program. So through the Affordable Care Act, those reimbursements to Medicare Advantage plans, and that's part of the reason that these plans would throw in dental or they threw in some vision, things that are not part of Medicare, they added extras, but part of that was because they were being over-reimbursed. Those reimbursements have been frozen for 2011. They're starting to be reduced 2012 to 2017. There is an expectation that there is likely to be some changes in the Medicare Advantage offering that you might have today versus in 2017. So nothing in the Affordable Care Act changed the benefits in Medicare, but this is the monetary reimbursements to Medicare Advantage plans that got reduced. So now we've talked about A and B, and we've talked about that little gap in there. We've talked about C. Now I'm finding more and more people are dealing with employee plans, not so much retiree plans. That was kind of a thing of the past. Fewer and fewer companies are offering retiree benefits to people over age 65. You are seeing retiree benefits to people under age 65 when they gave them packages to leave. So I want to make a distinction between employee coverage. There needs to be active employment. And then there's pre-65 retiree coverage. You might think of that, you got a package to leave the company before you turned 65, and then post-65 retiree benefits. The important thing about this is you really have to read the materials provided. you really have to read the materials provided, and so often people just don't want to read anything. But here's the unfortunate part. If you are working, they might not give you the information. So I have found that you really have to ask questions. You have to confirm coverage details. You have to obtain the supporting documentation. And you have to verify, verify, verify. And here's, I'm finding it more with plans where there's an employee count less than 20. So the company will have a small group plan. And, you know, there might not all be all that many people over 65, approaching 65, within that small group. So the employee benefits people are not really on top of this small percentage that may apply. And an employee benefits person in a company is really kind of thinking of the whole benefit plan, and it's the 65 group, we're getting bigger, but we're not up there yet. Then what I'm finding is the brokers also don't understand it, because the brokers are brokering small group plans. They're not brokering Medicare plans. You know, it's like they have a silo. If somebody was over here in a Medicare plan, they'd understand Medicare. They may not understand how it flips into the company plan. But unfortunately, the brokers don't understand how it fits into the company plan. And here's actually the scary part. I then talked to the health insurance companies, and it's somewhat similar, that the people in the health insurance companies are in the small group department. They don't understand how Medicare interacts with their plans. So that's why I'm saying, and they're not necessarily going to inform you, oh, gee, this plan doesn't cover you anymore at age 65. There's still going to be a premium available for you to take that plan. Some people may have to. So there's not anything that's a trigger point. So that's why you have to think, anytime there's somebody turning 65, there's going to be a change in, something's going to change, and if the company is not specifically telling you, it's your responsibility to have to figure it out. So when you have employee-related coverage, so this employee, I'm distinguishing an employer plan, employee-related. So somebody's actively working. We can have a spouse there, but it's related to active employees, in active employment. So here the variables are company size and somebody's turning 65. And here you want to confirm the benefits with the employee benefit department. So the distinction on company side, it is law, federal law, that if a company has 20 or more employees and they provide health coverage for the employees for which they get a tax deduction, they are required that they cannot discriminate between somebody over 65 and under 65. Non-discrimination, if it's over. So in that case, the company plan is deemed primary. Generally, in that situation, the employee who's turning 65 who still wants to work is going to pick up Part A because it's free. I'm assuming they've worked for 10 years. It's free, but they, at least now, they're more likely to decline Part B because of the perceived benefit they get from the company paying for part of this premium versus they have to pay for a premium. I will say, though, over time, as more and more employers are putting the cost burden to the employee, you really have to look at that financial pros and cons a little more carefully. Now, if there's an active employee and the company size is under 20, you can discriminate. Employers can discriminate. There is no requirement that that company has to provide the same insurance to people over 65 as under 65. So usually the plans say if the subscriber is otherwise eligible for Medicare, this plan will not pay those expenses. More legalese, but something like that. So in those instances, Medicare is deemed the primary payer, and the company is deemed secondary. And it's most likely in this situation that you would enroll in both Part A and Part B and come off of that company plan because they will still provide a premium for you over 65 on the company plan, but those rates have really gone up. But it all depends on the terms of the company plan. And I've had some really interesting client situations lately, and one of them had to do with this. It was for one client, I've only seen employer plans under 20 that excluded anything paid by Medicare that would otherwise be paid by Medicare. However, this one said anything otherwise paid by Medicare as long as there's no premium. However, if there is a premium and the person is enrolled, then we won't cover it. So if you actually read through that, and I have to read through it quite a few times, that situation was the employee had better sign up for Part A. As a matter of fact, I found out that this person was actually uncovered for hospitalization from last October. He has an appointment with Medicare on March 28th. Also on the Medicare Part B, he doesn't have to enroll in that. He doesn't have to enroll because the plan says if it has a premium and you haven't enrolled, then we'll pay for it. I have never seen a plan like that. So that's a really good example of how you really have to understand what the plan says. Now, here's some things that I think you want to consider when you're doing this Medicare versus company plan. Is Part B required or not? If it's required and you're not going to be covered, then you're definitely going to want to pick up the Part B. Does a high income premium adjustment apply? So if there's some if you have some options, then you have to start thinking, oh, well, wait a minute. If I go into a Medicare plan, is there a high premium that I'm going to be charged on that plan? And then what are your out-of-pocket medical expenses versus the premium on a Medigap policy? So let me just give you round numbers. If the premium on Part B is $100 and the premium on a Medigap, let's say $175, that's $275. Well, what if your employer required you to pay $275? Well, for this $275 over here with the Medicare options, you could get full coverage, no other out-of-pocket expenses if you choose the right plan and go to the right providers. But over here on your company plan, you still probably have an X thousand dollar deductible plus probably 20% coinsurance. So there's really a financial analysis here that needs to be done. Now, do you have high drug costs? And maybe the company plan provides more significant coverage without any donut hole. You know, maybe you're an arthritic condition. I did Medicare prescription drug plan for a person, but her arthritis injectables, I saved her $40,000 just by being on the right plan. Well, she might be somebody if she was working. Maybe the company plan pays better coverage. Are your providers already Medicare providers? You know, if you are and you're happy with them and you could potentially cover all your expenses, maybe you want to go into Medicare rather than staying on the company plan. Now, here's a big one, and this was actually with another client. Do you have to be on the plan so your spouse can get coverage? So there, you may be paying Part A, Part B, and an extra premium for which you're not going to get much out of it, but it gives your spouse coverage to a medical plan. That could be an overriding reason. And then can you get guaranteed acceptance back into the company plan during the plan's open enrollment? Generally, you can, but you'd have to wait for open enrollment. But I look at that as kind of the contingency plan. Well, if I try it this way, you know, I could potentially come back. So those, I think, are the important things to consider. So when you're applying for Medicare and you have employee-related coverage, they give you special enrollment periods when the work or the employer coverage ends. So no late penalties will be applicable, but again, you want to do that before you know. This is basically when you actually ultimately retire, before that happens. no late penalties either on Part B or Part D. So now let me talk about pre-retiree coverage. Now here you would have to review the requirements with the retiree benefits administrator, which is usually a third-party administrator for retiree benefits. You can be assured that the plan is going to change when somebody turns 65. And the reason is no company is going to continue paying the 80%, et cetera, when a Medicare government program is available to come to an individual that's going to be paying that 80%. So, and that's another thing. People don't really understand that these retiree benefits are not that the company is paying all of it. It's only the gaps, and it's morphed over the years. But you can be assured with a pre-retiree plan, you were given a package, something's going to happen when somebody turns 65. Either they're no longer going to be covered, or and then you have to think of the spouse and the individual. So for this, there is no active employment, and there is no special enrollment periods. So this happened with another client of mine. He was on his wife's retiree plan. He was over 65. She turned 65. Well, he actually should have signed up for Medicare at age 65. He actually signed up at 68. He was 2 years late, a 20% penalty. But more importantly, it happened her birthday was this weekend. So the coverage ended April 1st. The general enrollment period is January through March. If her birthday had been in April and he called me April 1st, he would have missed the general enrollment period for this year, only January through March with coverage effective July 1st. He has a 3-month uncovered period, but if he had missed it, he would have had a 15-month uncovered period. So it's really important to understand something's going to happen on these pre-65 retiree programs. So if there is a post-65 retiree program, in most instances, those are really big employers. Let's give CalPERS as an example. You generally have a lot of significant information, and it's really detailed. They really guide you through the process. But they will move you from a basic plan to a Medicare-based plan, but they really guide you through it. So I would say that that's generally how it works, because those post-65 retiree programs are with larger companies, and they have a whole departments to focus on that. So now I want to talk about Medicare prescription drug, which is also a health insurance intermediary. So you would sign up for a prescription drug plan through a health insurance company. There's two types of plan, prescription drug plans, standalone plans. There's 33 in the state of California. There used to be over 50. And then there are these Medicare Advantage plans with drugs, which we've already talked about. So there's no need to separately enroll in a Medicare Advantage drug plan. You're enrolling in the whole plan. So if we go back to this A plus B with a gap plus D equals C, I've already addressed the Medicare Advantage plan. So now I'm focused on the people that have to deal with Part D are those people that wanted original Medicare, and they've probably chosen a Medigap plan, so now they have to get a Medicare prescription drug plan. So I'm going to keep defining my universe, reducing it. Creditable coverage is very important with respect to drug programs. And it means that the drug program, you might have other drug coverage through your company, which is just as good as the government standards. If you work for a company, you've probably gotten one of these notices. They're required to send it out once a year. Because it's so difficult to know which employee and which spouse is over 65, companies tend to just send it to everybody, just because it's easier. So you might have seen one of these. If you have otherwise creditable coverage, you don't have to roll in a Part D plan. So let's reduce our universe here. It probably has creditable coverage if it's an employee plan. You'd have to check, though. And it probably has credible coverage if it's a retiree, a post-65 retiree plan, because those plans are getting some reimbursement from the government. So now I've reduced my universe. I'm going to reduce it a little more. If you don't take drugs, get the lowest premium plan. So now, who's left? We do have a group of people that are left. Probably about 24% of those people in Medicare are in a prescription drug plan. The premium ranges to less than 20 to over 100, and there is also a Part D premium increase for those people who have high income. The premium on the plan goes to the health insurance intermediary. This premium increase would be billed to you by Medicare. Now, the coverage basics. There's a government standard coverage. However, there's really no standard plan. All of these 33 plans are different. They meet a minimum, but there is no standard plan that equals the government's standard. Everything is different. It can have different formulary of drugs that are covered, different pricing of drugs. It can classify generics in different ways, branded drugs in different ways. It could be a second-tier branded versus a first-tier. Generally, generics are generics, but the deductible could be different. The premium, the drug price, the cost share, donut hole coverage or not. So there is nothing consistent about these plans. So the way you select a prescription drug plan is unlike any other way you have selected an insurance product. Just because the premium is high does not mean that gives you more coverage. Just because the premium is low doesn't mean that you got a deal. And I like to think of this as your birth, as your Christmas gift list. So if you have a list of, products, drugs that you're going to buy, assuming convenience and customer service is similar, it may not be, but let's assume it's similar, you probably want to go to the retail store where those commodities are the cheapest. That's how you should think of how you select a prescription drug plan. You really want to get the cheapest overall cost. And you really need to do this review annually because it is likely that your drugs are going to change annually. However, it is more likely that the plan is going to change annually. These are competitive in the marketplace. The plan's going to change. I can tell you that with my clients, I have yet to have a prescription drug plan that was the same plan. The best plan for my client was the same plan each year. Yet to have that happen. So this is going to be a little description of how you select a prescription drug plan. And what is really fortunate is that there is this incredible analysis tool on the Medicare website. It's called the Drug Plan Finder. It would be listed under Compare Health and Drug Plans or the Drug Plan Finder. And what it does, it takes all of these plans and equalizes them so that you can compare apples to apples. And the way you'd compare apples to apples is you add the premium in, you add the deductible, you add the cost, and what's the total estimated annual cost for these drugs on this plan versus this plan and this plan? That's exactly what it does. There is no way that you can do this manually. So fortunately, it is available to you, and it is very sophisticated. What you need to prepare, have prepared, it's by zip code, the offerings by zip code, your current prescription drugs by name. I'd recommend that you do it alphabetically because all the lists come out alphabetically. It's much easier to check your information. The dosage and a 30-day supply. Twice a day, that's 60 for a 30-day supply. If you're in a disease state that has a lot of drugs like Parkinson's disease, you might want to talk to your doctor what drugs might you be prescribed. And then you can identify specific pharmacies because there are contracts with different pharmacies. So what initially happens is that sorts all of these 33 plans with your drugs on from the lowest total annual cost to the highest annual cost. And it is amazing the variance. It's thousands of dollars of differences between these plans. I mean, thousands of dollars of differences. And it's all That's why if you think of this as your Christmas list, I think that's a good way to think of it. Where do you want to buy it? And the prices this year are going to be different next year, so you want to check that out again. So that's why you have to look at these annually. And then you're able to, you know, there's other ways to manipulate through it, to refine your search. It even gives you recommendations to lower your drug costs. You can go back to your doctor. There are plan ratings so that you can identify what's better customer service, what's a better plan, mail order, national coverage. So now, what's this donut hole? I don't think you should worry about the donut hole. If you get to the drug plan finder and you think of what your total overall estimated annual cost is, plan by plan, it computes how that donut hole implicates into that particular plan. So it's better not to think about it and look at what your total estimated annual cost is. And you enroll in a plan either through the plan provider or through the actual Medicare website. And the annual election periods subsequently are this October 15th to December 7th. I'm sure you've seen some advertisements about it. That's when you want, and you want to do it at the beginning of the period so that everything will be completed, so it will be all ready for the beginning of January. So those are actually the basics. We've gone through the ABCs of Medicare. We've gone through Medigap. We've gone through company and retiree plans, and we've gone through Medicare prescription drug. And again, it's not a factor that you're going to figure it all out after this, but I feel that it will guide you to the places where you need to ask more questions, think things through more, and find out exactly what your coverages are.
Good. Thank you. We'd like... We'd like to remind our listening audience, this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California. You've been listening to Esther Koch and what you need to know about Medicare before you're 65. And is government really too big? Think about it. All right, I know there are questions, but we've talked through the question period. So, Esther, would you be willing to stay and answer questions that individuals may have?
Right, we knew that was going to happen.
Okay.
We all planned right. It that way.
Okay. Our special thanks to Esther Koch, our speaker tonight, for her comments about what you need to know about Medicare before you're 65. We also thank our audience here as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 109th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned. Thank you.
Senior Advantage. That's an example of option C coverage.
Exactly. That's a Medicare Advantage plan. It's also a 5-star plan, so it's got the highest rating by the government.
I've got a Medigap versus Medicare Advantage.
A Medigap only works with original Medicare. So if you want to have a fee-for-service environment where you can go to any Medicare provider, then you probably want to have a Medigap policy, which covers the gaps in Medicare.
Okay.
The Medicare Part C is a managed care, so that's a whole, it's like the different road on how you look at Medicare.
Can you give a rough idea to the cost of each of those?
You know, it really depends on where you live, but you can get that information online through the Medicare website for the cost.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Hi. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, listen, I put off all kinds of decisions.
Didn't you? Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
Did
that help?
Well, I knew.
Oh, well, good.
I have read everything.
You have read everything.
I have
good.
Read everything.
Good for you. Good.
But
good.
I do have a question
okay.
for you. And I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. We can turn. There's there's a request that I take questions from the podium.
Take questions on the mic.
Take questions on the mic. Okay. There's a request. There's a request that I take questions from the mic. So. But I'll call on people. So, you're taking care of them?
No, I didn't get it.
Okay. Okay, your question?
My question was, I mentioned one switching policy with Medigap. If you sign up for one of those plans, I'm not talking about companies, but one of those individual plans, can you then switch to another plan and still be accepted? Because he said that over 65, the medical underwriting kicks in and you will not
right.
be accepted.
There actually are some special rules in this. Only this point applies to California, that if you are in a Medigap plan, and it's actually somewhat similar to how you might have an individual plan now, you are allowed the 1 month after your birthday each year to enroll in a like plan, a similar level plan, from another provider or a lower plan, which is something that you actually, you may not know it if you're in an individual plan, but you generally have that, they allow you within the in the plan itself, you could go to a lower plan without going through underwriting. If you want to hire more coverage, you have to go through underwriting. So for California, if you're in a Medigap plan, the 1 month after your birthday every year, you could go within the Medigap company that you're in and go down, or you could go across companies, parity, and down, but not if you go to a plan that has higher coverage, then you'd have to go through underwriting. Most people tend to not do that. Most people, when they're in a Medigap plan, they stay in that gap, that plan, but you do have that right. You know, I have found that AARP used to have the pricing available on the website, and now I find that you have to call to get the pricing. So, well, there are some insurance brokers that cover Medigap plans, so that you could interact with an insurance broker. And then what I would look at is how the plan is, how they change premium. Is it this age detained or community rating? And that's the things that I would look at.
That's all?
That's all.
We both work full time. We have a Blue Cross Blue Shield PPO plan with
company.
With him.
Are you on his plan?
So I'm on his plan, and I get a medical allowance every month because my employer is not insuring. So I'm wondering, based on what you said earlier, if I understood you right.
Is the company plan over 20 people?
Yes.
Okay.
I think, based on what you just said, which I would have to, if I was working with you, I would confirm that those are indeed the facts. But based on what you just said, if you are working age 65, in a company plan of over 20 employees, the employer has to provide you the same coverage it provides to this 30-year-old who may also have a wife. If that company provides spousal coverage to that 30-year-old, they have to provide spousal coverage to you. So you would probably not have any problem going forward, but it would be worth your while to sign up for Part A.
Yeah, I did that today.
Ah. And what did they ask? What did you go to an office?
No, I did it online.
You did it online.
Yeah.
So did they tell you what they were going to ask you for after? I'm just trying to figure out. What are they asking for today?
Just want to know my age, Social Security number, place of birth, mother's maiden name. If I was covered at work, if I wanted Plan B, I put no. And they asked if I had a plan, a work plan.
Right.
And I put yes.
Okay, so they're going to send you a form that you're going to have to give to your employer to validate your employment. And there may be something that says that you're going to have to send in a certified birth certificate. So make sure you read it when you go through.
Yeah.
That's what I think based on...
I looked back in a week. They gave me a confirmation number.
Right.
And they said to go back in a week and look at it.
Right. So that again, based on what you just told me, I would always want to confirm that because sometimes people don't catch all the nuances. But that appears to be your situation. Oh, sorry, wrong question. I could have sworn that was the question.
It's confusing. So based on what you said earlier about joining a managed plan, would it be smarter for him to look at managed plans now based on his age? Because if he waits for me to retire, and then I go to Medicare, and we look at a managed
it
so I guess what I'm saying is I get $450 a month from my employer because she doesn't insure me. But looking at plans, if it were just for myself, it's going to cost me probably another $400 out of pocket a month.
But you probably can't get insurance at this point. Individual?
I can. Well,
you can?
I can through my work.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said you couldn't through your work. Okay.
Yeah, no,
so this one's getting a little more complicated, and I know some other people have some. That's okay. I think that if you're asking, do you want to test out a managed care environment before you see what it's like when you're over 65, there is probably an HMO offering in your company, which you could try. But just because there's an HMO offering in your company, it's not necessarily going to be the same HMO offering at age 65. So what your company provides may not be what's available.
Right.
So and the premium when you are 65 and over is a standard premium in a Medicare Advantage. It doesn't change by age. It's a standard premium.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do not understand a Medicare versus Medigap. Is it one like a HMO and one like a PPO? Do you have a choice?
The way I think you should think of it is this alphabet of plans. So part A and Part B, if you want to have the freedom to go to any Medicare provider, then you would take Part A and Part B. You probably would get a Medigap plan, and then you get a Part D prescription drug plan. If you want to be in a managed care environment, then you would get what is now generally called a Medicare Advantage plan. And then, no, a PPO is still considered managed care in a Medicare Advantage plan. And it is actually managed because in a managed care over 65 environment, a PPO is a managed care plan. So you're getting a combination on one side or you're getting managed care. So that's the best way to look at it. The gap is this Medicare supplement plan that covers some of the gaps in Medicare. Those are through actual health private insurance companies. And it probably would be helpful that if you look at that resource list, that maybe go up on the Medicare website to get some additional information on that.
You mentioned that if someone's on Social Security,
Correct.
Does a person get noticed before, or has double checked before they get the E-65? Do they inform you?
They will send it to you. If you're on Social Security, when you turn 3 months before you turn 65, they will send you your card, and they'll send you a letter. Yes. I said, yeah. Not simple.
I'm 64.
Okay.
I am currently, I have a Kaiser self-grant. I'm not an employee. I have the Kaiser self-grant, which is a corporate company self-grant. The reason I have it is because I'm a corporate officer. And I am now on Social Security. So I'm going to assume that 3 months before my 65th birthday, I'm going to apply on the Social Security website, and I'll lock myself into Kaiser and talk to them and fill out whatever appropriate paperwork and just move over as a Medicare. And then you also use the phrase health insurance intermediary.
I tried to distinguish that. It's a private insurance company, but the reason I worded it that way is that it was really part of Medicare, so it's like you're going to go through a health insurance company who's an intermediary. They're getting reimbursed by Medicare. But you're dealing with a private company. Kaiser's a private company. Blue Shield's a private company. But they're acting as an intermediary. The government outsourced Medicare Advantage plans, and they outsourced Medicare prescription drug plans.
So I'm thinking that just switching my privately
paid for not to Social Security, it's to a Medicare plan.
Sorry.
Part of it. So if you're paying, not necessarily, because the company may not, if you're still covered under this plan, there still could be a premium for someone over 65 that stays on this company plan and you're working. Okay. Now just, okay. So you have to trigger it. The company's not going to trigger it. So you would be the one who triggers it. I will say it is more common that people who have been in Kaiser continue on a Kaiser Medicare Advantage plan. One of the things that's unique about Kaiser, it is the provider and the health insurance company combined. People, when they either love Kaiser or they hate Kaiser, when they are in Kaiser, and what's unique with Kaiser, now here's the ex-CFO coming in, when people are in a company, when they leave the company, one of the things with Kaiser is they go to another company, they tend to stay in Kaiser. So Kaiser has this ability to track an employee, one of their subscribers over time, because they stay within the Kaiser network, versus in a regular employee, this company has Aetna, this one has Blue Shield, this one has Blue Cross. So a lot of the ability of Kaiser, their Thrive program, it makes sense for them to implement things that are preventive, because they're going to see they have the useful life of a person where I'm the CFO and I have a turnover every 2.5 years. How many prevention programs, which I won't see the benefit of in 5 years, am I going to implement? So you do see that mainly people in Kaiser that have stayed in it for a long time will choose Kaiser Advantage, but if you're in a corporate environment, they're not going to be necessarily notifying you, so you have to trigger it. Okay? Anybody else?
So the subject, I guess, is best to take the notification of the plan about Social Security or anybody else. Go ahead.
Oh, you can trust me. Right, and there's one of those examples of how a company is not going to assume the responsibility of all of the burden of health care. So yes, she needs to do something. And it might have a drug premium. So she's paying Part B, a health care premium, and potentially a drug premium.
So you have to do one type package.
Right.
And meanwhile, I have 2 more years of my coverage plan, because I will essentially do the same thing. Maybe the door is going to
go. Right, and just husband and wife don't have to go under the same plans. But you certainly can. Let me make another distinction. Corporate officers and directors, just to the extent if it applies to anybody here. I had a client who was the owner of the company, a company you'd recognize the name, and he was the director of the company. And so then he came off the company plan at age, I think it was 78, but he was a director. He was not an employee of the company. He was really not technically in the employee plan. They had something carved out separately for him, but in his mind, he was on the company plan, all taken care of. He was, 78? So he was 13 years late in signing up for Medicare because there was no active employment. Fortunately, he was a significant high wealth individual. It was okay. Fortunately, again, when he triggered off was in February, so he was able to get in that January through March time frame. So his coverage started in July, but if that had all happened in April, he would have been uncovered for the 15 months. So there's a distinction with directors, not employees.